Okay, so today is April 7th, 2016. My name is Charlotte Yore, and I'm here with Shardinia Thompson Dunn in her home in Carrboro, North Carolina. So I was thinking we'll start with you maybe telling me a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up.
Yes, I was born here in North Carolina, but the Triangle area, when you're born, you say you're born in Orange County, there's no hospital really except Memorial Hospital. And back then, in the 1945, at the end of the war, when I was born at Duke Hospital in Durham. And in that era, a lot of hospitals, they hadn't really opened. It seemed they weren't open to blacks everywhere. So Lincoln Hospital was one of the hospitals. Maybe my mom would talk a little bit about that, and my aunt, because they were there in their 90s now. They can tell about how the medical situation was back then. But I know I was born at Duke Hospital. Many young kids were born through a midwife in that era. And my mom was born through a midwife. Or my grandfather delivered some of the children for my grandmother. That's the kind of background I have. But I was born in the hospital at Duke. But I grew up in Orange County, and really Carrboro, North Carolina, which is just adjacent to Chapel Hill. Went to school at Lincoln High School. And that was the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Would be like my childhood. So I have the real experience of segregation in America for that era. And that was a time when there wasn't much news, that you could get news of what was happening in some places. It was a lot of hearsay. You didn't have news channels where you get the news. But you knew what you were going through. So it was that era when entertainers could come through, but they couldn't live and stay. They couldn't get a night in a motel. So it was the era when an entertainer, somebody famous like Nat King Cole or Moms Mabley would come through, they would have to stay with people in their homes, black people in their homes. And so it was different. It was a kind of more intimate, and yet it was sad. It was sad because I know many of them, people who were famous in the black race, they were still treated like second-class citizens. And yet they excelled. You have to admire how they excel in their music and their talent. It was just fantastic. But for my own experience, I went to Northside School near here when it used to be the Orange County Training School. Many people know about that. And my mom, they even went to that, but they went to country schools. But I was like a city, like city education, because I was in town, could walk to school. For the elementary school, it was great. In those days, we had what you call operettas. I just remember so well. And they don't do that anymore for school. An operetta was like a musical, and yet a story and costumes. And oh, it was, and then we had May Days. And the teachers would just go out of their way to just make those days so festive. And it was just something the community could enjoy and the students could enjoy. Oh, I just have great memories of those. And then by the time I went into high school at Lincoln High, it was still an all-black school, teachers and principal, of course, and they had such a high standard for the students. They were role models for the students. They cared about you like parents. your school teachers were like parents to you, and they were like parents to a lot of kids, probably the only parents they had. And they would have like extra clothes in their little closet if a child needed food or snacks. They would see that the child got something to eat. It was just that kind of community living, even in the school. And the teachers felt responsible to just be role models to teachers as well as teachers the subject material. Now, of course, they didn't have the kind of supplies like the other schools. Our books were like the secondhand schools you read about in Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, and the kind of teacher that its education system was then. It was a lot like what we experienced. You just expected that you everything would be second class. And yet you had to learn it with that. I'll never forget in my high school, I wanted to take chemistry. But chemistry, we didn't have a lab that was worth 2 cents. We just didn't have it. And they couldn't afford it. And our chemistry teacher was so frustrated. I'll never forget how frustrated he was. He'd take us on chemistry field trips. Now, how can you be on a chemistry field trip? But just to get out of the class because we couldn't do anything with chemistry in the classroom. So I didn't dare take anything like chemistry when I went to UNC because I didn't have the background. I just didn't. I'd like to take it now, though. Might will someday. Anyway, so as I went through school, what helped me, I think, more than anything else was my parents had made the decision not to have a TV. Couldn't afford one anyway. But the main thing was we had to read books. And I read books galore. I read books. And my imagination just grew with being able to read books. And it helped me with my spelling. It helped with so many things. Reading many, many books. And right through high school, I was excelling with spelling. And it would be nothing for a teacher to come in and if they couldn't spell a word in another class, they'd come in and asked me to come to that class and spell it, write it on the board for them, even for high upperclassmen. But then another thing that the reading books did for me was when we had any downtimes in class and maybe couldn't carry out some activity that we were supposed to carry out, the teachers would turn to me and say, well, let Shadina tell you a story from one of the books she's read. And I would stir up kids to read because I would tell the story that I had read, and then they wanted to see the book, or they wanted to read the story. And that's the kind of thing reading books did for me. But then I went right through high school and was pretty much excelling to the point that I did become the valedictorian of my senior class. But then it was school, beyond high school. What would happen on that? And I didn't know what I would do. I didn't want to go to an all-black school for some reason. I just didn't. I wanted to go to an integrated school, and I didn't want to go to an integrated school where there were just American whites. I wanted to go to an international school. I wanted my education to be world citizen. To be a world citizen is what I counted a true education. The effects of a true education would be to be a proper world citizen. And so I applied for UNC. It was the only school I applied to. Now, that was risky in those days, to apply to only one school. If they didn't accept you, what would you do? But I got accepted because my College Board scores were high enough. And then not only that, but I got a tuition scholarship, which was very important for me. And it was the only year and the first year that they allowed women to come in as freshmen. And I was the only black woman to enter UNC at that time as a town student, a woman entering UNC. I don't know if that makes me the first. I don't think so. It just makes me the first one to come in as a freshman. And then I think that's basically it. There were upperclassmen, there were people in nursing school, women, probably black women, but I don't know all the history of that. But so that was in 1963. I graduated in June of 1963 and went into UNC in September of 1963. That was quite an experience for me, because coming from a segregated school, I was ambivalent about how prepared I was. And my fears were confirmed, because I found out that many students came in and had had prep schools or classes that the first 2 years they didn't even have to study for. Evidently, they had the modern civ and some of the history courses, and it was hard for me. I really had to study. But after those first 2 years, then it really told where we were, because we all had the same new material to face, and then it told who was really applying themselves and who weren't. I had some experiences, too, that were hard when it came to writing, being prepared to write. I realized I wasn't prepared to write. One English class I especially remember, the teacher just took one paper and he not only marked it up with red, he took it before the class and let them see how terrible I had written, with all these cliches and not using anything novel, just writing a lot what I had read, you know, the way it describes stuff. But anyway, after he did that, I went up to him and thanked him. I thanked him for letting me learn something from that experience, because I hadn't had the preparation that I should have had. And then he realized that I hadn't. And then he really helped me. He worked to help me more than ever, because he realized I didn't come from a background that I had been taught to really write well. I had learned to read, but I hadn't learned to write, a whole different thing. So anyway, that's a little slice of life as a student. I think the most important things I learned about being in an integrated school, my first integrated situation, was not only the tension of feeling like you're the only black in the class, but being a woman in a class, in a university that was basically and historically men, all men. And a lot of the men you could see resented having women come into certain fields, business, accounting. It was a lot of tension. They just didn't want to see you, a woman, in that field. Maybe they wouldn't admit it, but I felt it keenly. But what I did do at UNC, which I think was very important, was to seek out an international community, meet with foreign students, work with the United Nations branch college level, went to the UN with that group more than once. And it was very interesting to do that. And another thing was the YMCA. The YMCA in those years was like maybe it still is, but it was always open to all nationalities of people. And people would flow through there and you'd meet students from different countries. So I made it a point to meet foreign students and to work with the International Student Club, and got to meet other students. And that's how I ended up meeting a man from French, and he taught me some important lessons about race relations that prejudice is not taught. He convinced me that he had not been taught prejudice. It was completely foreign to him. That was something that he couldn't understand existed here in America. So that was good for me to grow to that point, to realize that is truly, it is possible for a person with white skin to not to be naturally prejudiced. I always thought anybody taking the right circumstances, if they had white skin, they would show up one day as being prejudiced. But he proved that to me, that wasn't the case. So I didn't end up marrying him, but he did want to marry me and take me back to France, and I was impressed with his open-heartedness about that. He really sincerely convinced me that it's possible to meet someone that is completely no prejudice. So,
what year was that? What year was that?
That would have been in the 60s because I graduated in June of 1967. So he was soon to be starting his master's in economics. So he was going to be leaving. He was going to be leaving, yeah, from UNC to go into another school and continue his work like that. So. Let's see, what else can I share at that level?
Well, you were a tutor for the Upward Bound program, right?
Yes, I did. I worked with Upward Bound, and I got into that. I'm not sure just how I got into that, but I am very glad I did, because although working with American students, it was good because I had a chance to influence 10th graders and inspire them to be on the right track. Because a lot of, underprivileged kids got into that, but they had potential. Mm-hmm. So you try to help them get on the track towards, like I said, it's Upward Bound. So I had some good experiences with that, working with that each summer. And in fact, when I was getting ready to graduate from UNC, my first job would have been to be like a guidance counselor in that program, to kind of help kids a little bit more to be guided into applying for schools and thinking about schools as early as possible. But as it turned out, I also had an opportunity to take a post as a missionary. And I had applied for that also, but thought it wouldn't come up until maybe 10 years hence. And when it opened up for September of 1967, I couldn't believe it. But when it came up, I knew it was my chance to do that. And this was like a international Christian group where you work in pairs, and a lot like the Peace Corps. You go into a country or in any area that you work, live among the people, and just help them with the Bible as your textbook, to learn how to apply it to daily life and be good citizens. That's basically it. So I did that in many different states and then in many different countries, and ended up working in the islands doing that work, and enjoyed 35 years nonstop as a missionary. And then my health failed. And when my health failed, I was basically in the islands at that time, got some kind of intestinal problem, and had to come back to the States to doctor. And then I also had a cancer scare in 1995, and that affected my health in the sense that I had to keep a watch. I had a lumpectomy in that year, but I had to keep a watch on my health no matter where I would go, get mammograms, and keep a check on what was happening with my health. Because I didn't want to stop traveling, and yet I didn't want to take any radical surgery because it would stop me from being able to carry a suitcase. And so I survived about 10 more years to finally I got a problem that I thought was maybe the cancer, but really it was an intestinal problem from something that I ate one day. People were giving me their best. They always give you their best, but it may not be uncontaminated. So that's what happened. And I went back to Puerto Rico and went to a doctor, but it was already too late. The parasite had latched into my intestines, and I suffered with that till I lost about 19 pounds, and then I came back to the States to really take care of my health. And then I realized I wasn't going to get back on my feet to travel, so I started doing some different things. So I volunteered, first of all, to in a program where you do income taxes. I volunteered doing that, and I volunteered in a reading program with kids. And then I ended up volunteering. No, it was really for pay. This was a substitute teaching at a school, a charter school. But the principal saw me working with the young people, and she called me aside and asked me, are you going to be able to go back and do your missionary work? Because I understand you're taking care of your health. And if you're not going to be able to do your missionary work, when you're better and able, consider working with us. And so I really appreciate that, because she gave me the opportunity to train for a testing coordinator, and I became the link between the state and the school, keeping all their testing materials and testing processes in order, and office manager work. And I really enjoyed it. Plus, I worked with the students at that school, New Century Charter High School, as it was called then. I worked with students to remediate them with math and reading, and it was just great, because I had seen in my travels schools where kids were struggling to just have school because of storms and that school facilities and disrepair. And I had seen in the Marshall Islands, kids didn't even have a school. They just outside in the elements. In the Philippines also, saw them outside in the elements trying to have school, and just very limited opportunities for education. And I wanted to come back to the States. If it ever came a time I wasn't able to travel, I would go to schools and volunteer just to put a tack in their chair, make them realize they needed to take advantage of their opportunity to get a good education here in the United States. And not just in school education, but to be self-motivated, to study and research as an individual, whatever material they're studying, go beyond what the class work is, the required work is, to do a self-education. That's what I wanted to inspire them to do, which is possible here in the United States. It's possible to take your own, just take it in control and learn everything you can learn. Boys and girls, learn all you can, and let your teachers just be stepping stones to guide you. That's what I did it. I did that with students. I was always talking to them, getting them inspired to learn the best they could. So that was my life. I started out in the 60s. My family, my father was the type that wasn't for us to get involved in the civil rights. He feared us getting involved too much in the civil rights movement. He didn't want his children in the marches. He didn't want them in getting jailed, because he felt that it would have repercussions later. So he kept us sheltered from that, but that didn't stop us from rooting for everything that was going on and keeping up with it and attending town meetings and keeping up with the history that happened during those days. So I do have memories from that time. And as I was telling you, Charlotte, I just feel that a lot of times people miss understanding what it was like in the segregation years, because American blacks lived in a subculture. We felt like we had a full life. We had a wonderful life in our culture, but outside of it, it was oppressive. It was like a ceiling that you couldn't get beyond. But the things you could do, you could enjoy. And the foods were fantastic. We just had wonderful foods, wonderful years of childhood, playing from neighborhood to neighborhood. And our neighbors were our parents. When our parents were working, you had another neighbor who could give you a spanking just as much as your parents could. I mean, that's the way we lived. And you didn't have to lock your doors. was just wonderful. It was just a different era then, but now kids in integrated schools, I wouldn't even begin to tell what that was like because I didn't know what that was like. But for my childhood, I have good memories, but I still feel sad that I grew up in a time where to go to a post office even, you see this, go to a bus station, colored white, water fountain, colored white. It was weird. And yet when you would be in the midst of other Americans or whatever they were, even if they were foreigners, you just felt like they were invisible. You didn't even see them. Your eyes were open only when you were in your own neighborhood or stores, activities where black people were, and then you saw people. You recognized them. You could speak to them. Otherwise, you had to be careful. You wouldn't just assume you could just, you know, get involved with speaking to people who were not black people. As a child, you were trained well to stay in the confines of your culture. So that was a reality. And was something else I was going to mention, though. And when I was at UNC, I was tapped into the Valkyries. That was an unusual experience for me. It was an honor society. I didn't have any idea what it was like. So I was living at home as a town student, of course, because that's the only way I could be attending UNC at that time. But this experience was unusual because how would they tap me into that unless I was in a dorm? So the way it turned out was a student that I knew well invited me to spend a night with her in a dorm. Now, that was very unusual, but I was open-minded to do that. I hadn't had any dorm experience, so I said, okay, I'll spend a night with you in a dorm. My parents agreed I could do it. I went to spend the night with her. Well, we were getting ready for bed, and all of a sudden, I had my hair in these large pink rollers. We were getting ready for bed, and down the hall comes this banging and sounded like some kind of parade clanging and going on. And they come to the door of the dorm room where I am. And they have this, I guess, a citation in their hand that they're reading and saying that they needed to take me away. And I'm dressed in bed clothes, really, and rollers in my hair. And they're going to take me away that night. And I didn't have any idea of what was going on. So they did take me away, blindfolded me, I went away with them. And my friend there, at least Swift Amelia, don't be afraid, Shadina, I'm going to be with you. But I had no idea what was going on. But we were taken to, I later found out, was a church and put in a sleeping bag, slept on the floor the rest of the night. The next morning, early, like about 5 o'clock in the morning, they came for us again, took us to the top of the bell tower. I was hardly dressed for something like this. And again, we got this citation that you're being tapped into the Valkyries, and it was really an honor, but what an experience to go through. But can you imagine this could have happened in my neighborhood? Could it have happened? No way. My neighbors would have thought the Ku Klux Klan had come after me. Really. It was so weird. But they did get it accomplished. It was in the newspapers. I need to find one of those copies of that newspaper that I had been tapped into an honor society. I guess I was relieved afterwards. But the best part about it was this honor society stands for something that is a little unusual. It's like the Valkyries were women who help people in need. And they even went out on the battlefields, from what I understand, and they risked their lives to help people and encourage them to fight the battle. you know. And I think that that has it really kind of became the motto of my life, is to live like that, you know, not just for knowledge, you know, education, but really for living, to have tools like that, more than knowledge, but qualities, virtues that can help people fight battles through life. And so I'm kind of glad I'm kind of counted in with that kind of, what you call it, like a mantra, you know, to live like that, to not just for one time honor thing and have a little pin or have your name on a plaque, but to have that calling to, and see the need, actually have eyes open to see people in need and want to help them to get victory in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it has been. I've met many wonderful people in my missionary work, seeing them change and grow, and just, you know, and it still is my goal. If I can be a help to anybody, to help them with life, and whatever life deals to them, that's what my life is still about. Do we have any other things we need to cover?
Well, I'd like to know how you think living off campus impacted your experience as a student.
Well, living off campus, a lot of kids live off campus now, mm-hmm. but I think the first years you can't really live off campus because you need to focus more on your studies. But I managed it because I had to. But I don't know. I don't think I missed anything about dorm life. I was kind of sheltered from some of the things that happened in dorms. But working with Upward Bound, I had a little chance, too, of dorm life on campus life. But then we tried to protect those kids from getting into too much trouble, you know, in any way. But it didn't. I could walk to school, you know, and that was good. And then a lot of my activities at school involved me traveling, like we did going to the United Nations with the Y, with the UNC, the United Nations Club. So I really don't think it had much effect. It didn't hinder me in any way. Mm-hmm. It kind of kept me grounded in a little ways too, because I, no matter how much I moved in amongst people at that time in integrated situations, it kept me grounded that the real life was outside of the school. You have to keep yourself level-headed about that when you're American Black. You can't just get yourself carried away that you're going to be able to do outside what you can do at the school. You know? Mm-hmm. Facts are facts. You have to keep that. In that time, you had to keep yourself grounded about that. You just couldn't do everything you could do at the school out in society and feel like it's okay. Mm-hmm. Even mixing with other students. Now, maybe they do it, but you couldn't back then. You couldn't go to parties and all that stuff with other students. And not involve in sororities and fraternities, too. At a integrated school, even Black schools, American Black schools, they have sororities and fraternities. You see, that's still separate. I think that's still separate today. They might have some mixing, but it's not very mixed.
So what was your social life like your first year?
My first year, very little. Like I said, what we did was I looked forward to meeting international students, but then when I would meet them on campus, even anybody brown or Black, I would gravitate toward them to talk to them. But like I say, it was an education for me to realize that here's somebody who has the same color I am, but their culture is completely different. And you don't have much that much communication as you think you could have, mm-hmm. when their culture is different. It's good to get broad-minded and learn about their culture, which is great. But when you're going to really interact and find out how much you have in harmony, you don't. I had more harmony. I could have more harmony talking with somebody who was willing to talk to me, who was of the opposite race, than with somebody who was my skin color. You know, I found that we had the same foods, we had the same, read the same books, we, you know about the same activities. I mean, you know, you could have a lot you could talk about when people were willing.
How do you feel you were treated differently by the men versus the women on campus?
Well, I really think that back then there was some tension because of that being an all men's school, you know. I felt that, and I don't know if during that era when a man chose to go to an all-men school, that was their mentality when they went there, you know, not going to a co-ed school, you know, and they went to so that they could focus more on their studies and, you know, not be distracted by women, because UNC had its counterpart of a women's school in Greensboro, and they would interact from time to time with activities. You know that how that went. But to have women in their school when they are focusing on being an all-men's school, that was an adjustment for them, you know. And I think we were encroaching to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I think we were. But certain professions, it's what you have to realize. That's what I finally realized, that certain professions are limited. They don't want women in them. And I felt that keenly. And it was more about being a woman than being a black. And it may be still today that there are some professions still like that today. That's gonna cover.
So, were you involved in any of the student protests or activist groups on campus?
No, on campus at that time, I don't think we even had anything. There, if any students came out, they came out of the school to be with the community.
Right.
Now it's more like things that happen at the school, mm-hmm. you know, activism in the school. But at that time, which was fantastic, there were students who were brave enough. When I was a teenager, when I was in high school, students who came out and participated in the community. That was what was doing. Hello? Because my father was very strict on us about getting involved in too much community stuff like that, because he feared there would be repercussions. You know, maybe even on them, as him, you know. In the past, it has been facts that if blacks got too far out of line, they could lose their job. My father tried to be self-employed. He could lose getting business. So all that was pressure. They, you know, and at best, it was hard. So if his children or he was participating in things that, you know, would like, trouble in the waters, you know, or the status quo, you know, they could suffer for that. Back then, that was crucial. So,
Do you feel like, or how do you feel your experience of race maybe changed from your first year till your last year of school, if at all?
Yeah, I think some. Not a lot, though. Not a lot. It depends on, I wouldn't have dreamed in my wildest dream of the world of fraternities and sororities from the beginning to the end. I don't even know what happens now, but that was completely like on the other side of the world as far as I was concerned. I wouldn't even have thought that I would have been invited to anything like that, even though my father worked at fraternities, my aunts, I mean, that was part of the black in the community worked at those sororities and fraternities. That was part of that, some of the mainstay jobs, and got good pay for doing it. And even the food that was left over that the students didn't want, a lot of black kids grew up on that food. Really, that's, you know, fraternities and sororities, but as far as the blacks' children participating and being on that level, that would be, I mean, they wouldn't even think of it. I wouldn't even think of it, you know, that I would ever be accepted into something like that. It's just impossible. Maybe some whites feel that way too, that they wouldn't fit into that. That it's a class thing, right? It's a class thing. And I, you know, so some things like that would never change. But as far as the school the teachers, professors, I think some of them acted better by the time I, because when I first met some of the first professors that I met, even they looked like they were kind of, you know, like put on the spot. They didn't want to be too friendly. You know, they didn't want to be too outgoing towards you. You did just all business, you know. Deal with you, with your, you know, work and all. That's it. Nothing extra, you know. That was, but, you know, President Friday, I'll never forget him. He was always, it was just something very approachable about him. Why did I have any contact with him? I think it was because when you had to do your tuition scholarship and you had to get everything renewed and he would be reviewing your grades. I don't know why I would have contact with him sometimes. And he would always encourage me, you know, to keep, you know, in, and how proud they were that I was there and continuing to qualify to get a tuition scholarship. It was great. You know, I never forget that. He was so nice about that. But I do remember him. I don't know if he was the president. It had to be, I guess. I don't know why that's not so clear to me. But anyway, there were some people. And then another professor that was great was Dr. Gere. He was a history professor. Old people know the Gears, anybody who knows Chapel Hill. His wife worked with the public library. They were great people. But he was a great professor, and he was just open-spirited, you know. And then who was another one that was really special? Oh, yeah, this Anne Queen. She was with the YMCA at that time. She was a fantastic person. She would just reach out to anybody of any culture, and make, she opened her home to students to come and have tea. The Queen, her home would be open for kids to just come and just sit around on the floor, drink a cup of tea and talk. That's kind of, you know, that was a nice atmosphere back then. I never forget that. And then I got into some honor classes that were special. I'll never forget that. Some of the classes were no more than 10 students, and it would be an honor class. And you'd even go out and sit on the lawn, and you'd write special papers. And, oh, those were great. They were great times, you know, those kind of things I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. How did your interactions with the other students maybe change throughout the 4 years?
Like I said, up until I should show you a Yakety Yak, and show you the pictures that I appear in the book, the yearbook. It was always with some foreign school, foreign students, some activities like that. That's what I did. I just made sure that if anybody came from another country, that I would be there to meet them and get exposed to, you know, what they had to offer, you know, coming from their country and the different languages, the different foods. We had international dinners. That was special, you know. So we did things like that. So I just felt like that was true education. And they had a lot to offer, you know. They really were people from all different countries, I remember. Yeah, just made sure that I spent my time like that to meet them and to greet them and to follow up whatever they were doing for the university while they were here. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she worked at the Health Affairs Library with the medical school. And her work kind of affected me too, because she, you know, was doing library clerk work coming from the education she had in background, worked as a maid. Then she got into working with her her boss that, you know, she was helping her in her home, but this woman offered her a job to come to the library, shelf books, repair books, all kinds of stuff like that. In German, she was working with books in German and learned enough German to file them properly, you know, shelve them properly. And so it was great, you know. So that kind of spilled over into our, it made us have something in common. She was at the university as well, you know, from where she had, her background didn't hinder her from learning as much as she could. And when computers first came out, that was the era. We had those IMB, you know, the IBM cards and all that stuff. And then Mom, she was there when they had the first computers in the library. That was some time to be in on when that first started, you know? Yeah. I'll never forget that, running those IBM cards, doing surveys and stuff, and running them through those machines. Clackety clack and all that. Oh, it was something.
So were you helping her out sometimes?
Would you go I did. For summer work, Mrs. Ebert, who was running the library at that time, she was one of the head ones. She would give us work to do during the summer and help pay for school. Mm-hmm. That was great. Mm-hmm. I did work over there at the Health Affairs Library. Yeah, let's see if we can think of anything else to cover. That school that I mentioned, the New Century Charter High School, is now mm-hmm. Hallbridge. Mm-hmm. And it still exists up there in Saxville Hall. Mm-hmm. Just a wonderful, I think I got really impressed with charter schools and what they can do. That no child falls through the cracks, you know? Mm-hmm. A wonderful atmosphere. And that school, particularly the one that, when I worked there, Dr. Marsha Hughes was there. And her, part of her vision was to create an international atmosphere for the students. So she would have teachers, and some of them were professors at one time, that she would have to come and interact with not only teach the students. She had Chinese, they had African, they had Trinidadian, they had all these different nationalities, and we'd have international dinners there. It was the greatest atmosphere to work in. And kids, you know, American, black, and white, and then some kids from a few Spanish, and you know, but not a big student population, but it was an international atmosphere for an education. It was wonderful. It just blended right into my life, the continuation of my life work there at that school. I never forget
that. You were a testing coordinator and a tutor?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So what did that involve?
Testing coordinator. At that time, those years, it's changing. They're trying to get away from too much testing. But the school and the teachers and the students were under such pressure to make high scores on tests, you know? And because of that, in math and English and all that, with the school's rating and funding depended on those test scores. And the teachers and the students were just agonizing over really making high scores. And that school, from the time I started with it to the time I left, they progressed just exponentially. They were making such low scores to making more and more progress each year with the testing. And that wasn't really our goal. Our goal was for them to have a well-rounded education, mm-hmm. but it was having that effect. Mm-hmm. It had that effect of them being better in math. And these were kids who had failed in other schools. And that was such a thrill to me to see that happen. So, I like the testing. I'm not against the testing. But my philosophy about the testing is more like, when I would work with the students, I would get them prepared to the point that they could walk with me down the hall and spout out to me, whether it's math or biology or whatever. I would zap them with questions. You've got to have this in you enough that you can just spout it out to me, not with from a paper or a book, but you've got to be able to talk to me about this and have these answers because you have thought about them and you can spout them out on your feet walking with me down the hall. That's when I say you're ready for that test. And when I test them like that, and I'd use materials, it didn't matter the what the material involved, I would put it on a level they could almost run a jog with the paper and understand it. It didn't matter if it was fifth grade level. If it was the same material, that's all that matters. Make it as simple as possible for them to get the concept. And that's the way I work with them. So I would do it in illustrations or whatever I needed to do, games, whatever, just so that they get the concept. And then that you can make it as complicated as you want to later with journals and all the scientific knowledge, but let them get the concept first in a simple way. And that's the way I worked with them. And then I would test them. They knew when I came up to them, they better know what they needed to know, whether it's multiplication tables or whatever. They had to know it without any supports while they are walking and talking with me. It was fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Preparing them for that testing, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel when you think back on your time at UNC now? What kinds of feelings do you have?
I'm glad that I was that I went there. I'm glad because it got me out of my comfort zone, that's for sure. And like I said, it prepared me later when I met people from all over the world in different places and different cultures and different I could appreciate their language, their foods. Like I said to that young student, I learned to eat all kinds and respect it. If they had to eat crickets and recognize that it was safe to eat and it was protein, I could respect that, you know. I ate that little 13-day-old egg in Philippines and realized that it was safe to eat. It was a hard-boiled egg. You know, it was a little duck in there, but, you know, I learned to be flexible enough to say, I can try this. I can, you know, if these people have learned to survive this way, I can respect that and learn to do it too, you know. And it was fun. When I was in the Philippines, I went to take a bath in the river, you know, and oh, the different things, experiences I had in some of those places, of their lifestyle. This is their lifestyle. But some of those little poor homes, guess what they had growing in their yards? Orchids. Beautiful orchids. So God has a way of balancing things out. They might be poor, but they've got riches in the same time. You know, you just have to see that it's amazing. And so I've learned I the French language, I was taking a lot of that when I was in school, but then I had to learn a lot of Spanish. And then in every country that I went to, I always try to learn to speak their thank you in Korean, comes to Hamida. You know, just learn to speak whatever they, at least be able to say thank you, hello, a few things that you can connect with a person with in every language of every country that I went to. I did. And you can look out there in the library in the sunroom. All these language books, all kinds of language books I have, tapes and languages. That's me. I love it. Yeah, a lot. Mm-hmm. It was great, just great. So here I am now, 70 years old, but there's a lot yet to discover here. And what I do with my mom a lot is get on YouTube and we'll do I call them classes. We'll do music appreciation, or we'll do history, we'll do, and I like to go back into the era when she was growing up, people who sang songs that they knew back then and let them hear them again, and learn about people that they heard of but never learned about them like they wanted to learn about them, that they know existed, because they, I heard my aunt say the other day, she went to the armory and actually had a chance to hug and kiss Nat King Cole. I mean, you know, just to greet him when he came to this area. So it's a lot of things that they have in their, the riches of their memory that just needs to be activated, you know. And then when you activate it, they're losing their memory, and yet it's so much there that you can activate, and they can tell you more about it that a book couldn't tell you, you know. Mm-hmm. So I like doing that with them now. I work with them a lot, get on YouTube and find things, and they'll tell me even more about it, you know. That's the way it's going to be when you talk with them. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we do we get
covered. Yeah, is there anything else that I didn't ask that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I'm just scanning here. I was away from the States when 9/11 happened. And I had just arrived in Puerto Rico. And to have that happen when you're in a foreign country, it was devastating, you know, to hear about the homeland, you know, and it just makes you realize how American you really are. You know, you grow up in a situation that's segregated or whatever, but when it comes down to it, you're American, you know. And so I think that's a good note to end on, is that, you know, you just feel it when the homeland is devastated in any part, you know, and you're in a foreign country. It's some feeling that you feel for America. You just all I could do, I said, I've got to go back and see it for myself. I can't believe it happened. And that was the first thing I wanted to do when I got on American soil and I landed in New York, was go down to Ground Zero and actually see it for myself. You know, that what all that devastation like? Happened, huh?
What was that like?
Oh, it was awful. It was not, in Puerto Rico, it was an atmosphere that everybody was crying for America there. I'm glad I wasn't in a place where they would be happy it happened, you know. But there, they were, everybody on the, all the neighbors just came out where I was in San Juan, and they were just weeping about what happened. And then when I came back to the States and I went down to the area and actually saw it, I just couldn't hardly take it in, you know. It was an awful feeling. So I just hope someday we'll have a world that'll be, it's safe for everybody. You know? That's the thing. Because that's all, like I said, we're all bonded because we're human beings. We all mm-hmm. should be bonded, you know. And the sooner we can learn that, the better. Better we'll be, you know.
Well, thank you so much for...
You're welcome.
Speaking
You're welcome.
With me.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get
pleasure.
Something else in. I'll look for some of the pictures that you might be able to add,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
to. And we'll see what we can do about that.